Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Stretford Paddock. This is Uncensored, the show where anything goes.
Is that what we're going for?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. We've got Joe McGrath. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, mate.
You're a man where anything goes, aren't
you? I'm ready for anything to go.
Yeah.
I love my life one chaotic moment at a time.
Exactly. Do you mean live
today,
your life?
Live. Yeah. And today is going to be just like that, ladies and gentlemen.
It is. And it's been very chaotic at Man United because we're going to be talking, obviously, Man United. We're going to be talking about the new structure. What is going on at Manchester United, how things are looking, a little bit of a detail on everyone that's come in so far.
Yeah.
Because it's been, like you said, it's been chaotic at United as well as your life. Mm-hmm. It's been hard to follow. If you've not been keeping track every single day, you may have missed a piece. There are people in this cogs in this machine that are, you know, up until the last couple of weeks have been unknown to most of us.
Do you ever feel like, do you remember when you're at school, you used to do on close day once every term? Do you ever feel like you could on this channel just,
why, whose clothes were you wearing for the rest of the show?
Someone else's clothes, my dad's. For just one day, just not mention United at all. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
That would, but that's your day off, isn't it?
No, you come in your own clothes. You wear a uniform, don't you?
Yeah, these aren't mine. These aren't weirdly, your dad's. Aren't they? We've both got your dad's clothes
on. It's great. Have you got his boxers on?
I haven't.
Very tight.
He's got them on today. We share them. There's only one pair.
So I think one day, just come in and talk about penguins or something.
Well, later on in the show, there may be room for manoeuvre in terms of the topic. But I want to start with some United talk. Let's go from the top down then. So with Ineos coming in, obviously the big boy is Jim Ratcliffe.
Yeah.
But in terms of actual footballing decisions, he is very much a sort of a figurehead rather than a sort of day-to-day operator at Manchester United.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who have come in with him are the people who are actually running what at first was, we were told, was just going to be the footballing side of things.
Yeah, that was
the first thing to remember. The Glazers have given control of the footballing operations to Ineos and Jim Ratcliffe. Then a couple of weeks later, and let's not forget, we're less than 2 months into this takeover. Actually, officially being ratified, we're about 2 weeks in. But I think the deal was agreed on Christmas Eve. So we're less than 2 months in. Already in that time, the Glazers have also said, or the reports have also come out, that the Glazers went, actually, you can do a bit of the sort of financial other side of it as well.
They don't want it. They don't want it anymore. But they still want the money that comes with it.
Yeah.
So they're basically passing the book to Sir Jim one step at a time, which I think we should be a little bit thankful for. I know they're still there and we wanted 100% of a sale, but things are already moving in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely. This is better than them controlling the football 100%. Side. This is better than them having full control of the financial side, which I think they're obviously still involved in, definitely. But they are sort of relinquishing more and more control to Ineos by the week. So let's start at the top then. So on the board of directors at Manchester United, who came in with the Ineos sale, is Dave Brailsford, or Sir David Brailsford, as you may know him.
Yes, I do, Sir David.
Yeah, you just, in your phone, Sir David.
It's, we're going to be full of sirs soon, aren't we?
I know, it's like the Labour Party in Manchester these days. So Dave Brailsford, for those who don't know, was the head of British cycling, sort of turn of the millennium-ish.
Yeah, he invented the stabilisers.
No, he didn't invent the stabilisers.
Did he not?
No.
Who was that?
I don't know, they've been around for hundreds of, decades.
The bell, the bell, ding, ding.
Yeah, he invented
the bell.
He invented that. The Dave Brailsford bell. So, he was the sort of head of British cycling, and he came up with, it's almost like saying Newton invented electricity. It was already there. He harnessed
the
concept
like
of marginal gains. Because the idea of like people going, well, if I eat well and I train well and I wake up on time and I don't, you know, get bladdered every night, these things existed, but they'd never been put into this sort of like particular framework that Brailsford did it. So he's focusing on not just, you know, get into training, train 5 hours a day, let's push the, he's thinking, what are the other things in an athlete's life that would contribute to them being successful? Is it their happiness? You know, are you more likely to train well if you feel motivated, if you're less stressed, if you're sleeping well, if your diet is better, do you recover faster? If you take drugs, do you recover faster?
Yeah, of course.
You know, I'm not saying they did that.
No.
But obviously cycling and athletics is big into that.
We're down a hole.
But this basically took British cycling from, I think we'd had two gold medals in the previous sort of, you know, couple of generations, to all of a sudden being the dominant force in cycling in the world in three Olympics in a row.
Yeah.
Which is massive.
A couple of Tour de France as well.
Well, that's slightly later on. So it's still obviously part of the British cycling world, but not British cycling as an institution.
Yeah.
So England have gone from where they are, Britain have gone from where they were, you know, sort of languishing, not one of the top dogs at all, to being by far the dominant force in cycling, culminating in that 2012 Olympics where I think they won somewhere over 20 gold
medals. Great day. It was sad for everyone else, wasn't it?
It was sad for everyone else, and that's what United wanted, didn't it? So he's obviously got that behind him. Then he went and worked with Team Sky, I believe, as it was then, which became Team Ineos, I think, when Jim Ratcliffe came in, and won the Tour de France with Bradley Wiggins. With Geraint...
Not Evans? Geraint Thomas.
Geraint Thomas. As well.
Weirdly, I can still access his podcast Facebook page.
Pardon?
I can access Geraint. Oh, this is weird. Geraint Thomas, right?
Right.
I worked for a podcast company and I got access to Geraint Thomas's Facebook
page.
When you
say access, like you could like delete posts and like write posts?
I could tweet now going, post now saying we mentioned Geraint in this thing, you know.
Put a link to this podcast.
I try and get myself out of it, but Facebook won't let me go. It's like I keep trying to log myself out, but every single time you've got a new message, it'll be by some like Welsh name and it's connected to Geraint Thomas.
Incredible.
What should we put?
Just put a link to this podcast.
Yeah, then they'll definitely kick me out then, won't they?
Yeah, definitely.
I think that one of the big boys has to kick me out. Yeah. I'm just like a silent
message
partner.
Geraint himself.
Could do.
So obviously then he had that massive success there as well. He's done other things. He's now the kind of sort of sporting overlord at Ineos. Do you know what I mean? He's the one who guides the direction of Ineos as a whole. Ineos, of
Vader.
Course.
Darth Vader.
Well, no, above that. He's sort of the emperor.
Is he?
Yes.
He's
Although in that metaphor, what does that make Brailsford?
His
Maybe
dad
just
or something?
Time itself.
Time itself, yeah.
His dad. He's not his dad. And the Emperor's dad isn't a character in Star Wars either.
They're all, you know, getting on it.
They are a little bit. But Brailsford is obviously someone that has been massively successful in cycling and athletics. And then we're looking at Nice as well. I think they're second in League One at the minute. They've been a bit choppy and changey with managers and stuff, but they've got a young manager in there now. I think last I checked, which was about a week ago, they're about 12 points behind PSG. But, you know, they're
PSG,
a much smaller team. Yeah. They don't have the same funds, etc.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Dan Ashworth, obviously, we'll get to his role at Manchester United, but he was speaking about Dave Brailsford. They know each other, have known each other for a long time. He said, I've known Sir Dave for a number of years, working across various different sports, and he's without doubt the best in the world in sport at creating high-performance culture and turning that into winning.
Wow.
Which is, I mean, without question, the biggest compliment he can give them there, isn't it, really?
Yeah, 100%. And what you look at United's squad, and I think, like, we've always harnessed great talent, and we've always got great talent coming through. But if we're saying that we've got people at the top of their game that can get the best out of talent, sometimes we've always... Like, we've brought people into the club over the last 10 years since Fergie's left. We've always had these hopes and these ambitions. But I remember once doing a show with you here on it when we looked through every single transfer we've ever done since Fergie left, and were they a success or not?
Yeah.
And a lot of them weren't.
No.
But imagine if you've got someone in power now who knows how to get success out of people, who's got an eye for ambition and an eye for talent. Every single person coming through the door, hopefully then, could become an integral part of a United team that goes on to win the league.
And it's weird as well, isn't it, because it's not like him being here and him with his marginal gains and all that isn't going to make Antony a world-class player, or
no.
You know, maybe that's slightly unfair on Antony, isn't going to make Morgan Schneiderlin a world-class player or a Memphis Depay a world-class player, or, you know, maybe. But what it will do is, when the people below him who are supposedly and hopefully identifying world-class talent more often, when everyone who joins Manchester United at every level is almost passed through this filter.
Yep.
You enter a world where this is how we do things.
Yep.
You will get the best out of people. So obviously he's not going to be talent identification, but he's going to be setting the tone and setting the culture of what it is to be at Manchester United.
Yep.
And you look back at under Sir Alex, and that was clearly there then. But at that time, it was people like, I mean, obviously before, I always go to Roy Keane as the one sort of holding the standards in training, this, that, and the other. But he learned that from the likes of Bruce and Pallister and Schmeichel and you know, other people in that squad from the generation before, Cantona, of course, as well. He learned that from them, and then the next players learned that from him, and then the next players learned that from them. And now we've had this void of about a decade where there's no one really to learn from. If you enter the United dressing room now, who are you learning United standards from to the level that they should be at? There's not really anyone there. I mean, you look at Bruno's work ethic, and obviously he's a great player, but he doesn't have a history of winning. You look at the people who do have a history of winning. Let's go down that route. Well, Varane and Casemiro, both of them look like they're going to leave in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, one of them fell out with it, not necessarily fell out with the manager, but isn't, you know, guaranteed to start in Varane. Casemiro at times looks like he's sort of taken his foot off the gas a little bit. And everyone else has got more failures on their CV than they have successes. You need that to come from the top down sometimes. So hopefully Brailsford can be a big part of doing that. Now, next, I say down, I don't know if it's sort of
Yeah, we don't
across.
Know what order these are in, but this is just the order we're doing it.
These in particular, I don't know what order. The rest of them, it's more of a sort of hierarchy. Jean-Claude Blanc, who is also on the board, so theoretically is sort of level with David Brailsford. He's the chief executive of Ineos Sport, where Dave Brailsford was the director of sport at Ineos. So I think slightly under Brailsford is Jean-Claude Blanc. Now, he spent time at Juventus, at PSG. Interesting things on those two. One is, he was there when Juventus built their own stadium in the early 2000s or late 90s. Oh, nice. And it was the first time, obviously United looking for a new stadium now, or, you know, revamping it. It was the first time in, I think, Italian league history that a club had made their own private stadium that wasn't government-owned or government-backed.
Right.
Because up until then, pretty much all the stadiums were owned by the government. Right. So that was a big thing at the time. You know, then drugs bans and all that, they got really good.
Yeah, we'll move on.
Then he went to PSG. It's a slip of the tongue, isn't it? Bribing refs and all that. Then he went to PSG and sort of wasn't doing the football side, but was doing the commercial side. So do you know, remember their links with like Jordan and all that?
Their kit with
the Jordan badge on that was turned them into one of the biggest sort of
fashion
football brands.
Well, you'd say probably the
PSG
kit was the out of every single top in the world. I think it overtook, you'd say your Barcelona's, your Real Madrid's, as being the most popular to wear fashion-wise.
Yeah.
You were seeing like celebrities and musicians wearing it. They don't even know who PSG is. They couldn't say who plays left-back, could they?
No.
They liked the top. They liked the look of it. Everything was cool about the branding. So he did a good job there.
Yeah, exactly. So they became this sort of big brand, and he was head of the commercial side at at PSG. And obviously a lot of the stuff they did on the pitch, their decision making for contracts and transfers and stuff, is the exact opposite of what United want. But I don't think he's going to be doing that. And he wasn't doing that then for them.
Yeah.
So like, take away like, you know, giving all the like Ramos and all this big money. That wasn't Jean-Claude Blanc. Jean-Claude Blanc was making PSG one of the biggest and most attractive brands in the world with all this new money that they had. And he did an undoubtedly amazing job at that. He also talked about when he was at Juventus, he said, you arrive in this environment that is necessarily dynamic because you have a mountain of problems to deal with at once. This is when they'd been relegated to Serie B. So he actually came after all the scandal stuff. He said, practically 100 days are decisive for the club's future. If you make a bad decision in those 100 days, it's over. Then it would take you 20 years to return. In those 100 days, we took many good decisions. Now, what are we, sort of about 50 days or so into, you know, Jean-Claude Blanc, Brailsford, Ineos' ownership?
What happens if we balls it up?
Well, what happens if we balls it up? But we've certainly made a lot of, decisions in 50 days.
Me.
I know, well, the last 10 years have gone by like that, haven't they? 11 years this season.
Time's mad, isn't it?
Time's stunning, isn't it?
Time is stunning. Excited about all these. I know we're just halfway down the list, but there's a lot of incredible names coming in here. I've never worked on a board. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm trying to get at is
I've seen you work on a few cheese boards.
And a meat board platter.
Very good.
But. Are all these, I've got 2 points, are all these names, we're going to go through the most of the list, are all these names going to be a case of they're all going to gel and work incredibly well together?
Yeah.
Or are you worried that, like, there's a lot of big personalities rocking up
it's
here?
It's a good point.
And like, it's obviously... What if they don't, like, all get on?
Well, it's not 100% guaranteed that they will, but I think we can be pretty sure that Jean-Claude Blanc and Dave Brailsford work well together because they've come together at the same time. They were already working together at Ineos. Obviously, we get through Berada, Ashworth, Wilcox and whoever else it may be as we go along.
Yeah.
Again, though, we've already got a character reference of Dave Brailsford from Dan Ashworth.
Right.
So you know they like each other.
But Berada being the new CEO, let's get on to that. That's the big boy.
That's the... Obviously, we've got these other guys who are doing everything. They're above him. They're on the board. They can sack him. But he's the one who is doing the sort of day-to-day running of the on-the-ground manoeuvres of Manchester United. It's not a bird, Joe. It's not a plane. It is the greatest update and innovation in male grooming technology the world has ever seen. It is Manscaped. It is their brand new Performance Package 5.0 Ultra featuring the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. And with our special code PADDOCK20, you can get 20% off and free shipping over at manscaped.com. The link is in the description. Joe, tell me about Manscaped. What have they done for you and your grooming game?
Listen, Manscaped... You're rocking up. You know, you have your routines. I like to do it over the toilet.
Yeah.
So all the hair just falls straight into it.
Beautiful.
In the past, previously, it's been... It could be like a crime scene in there.
Yeah.
I'm nicking the ball bag.
Oh, yeah.
I'm cutting stuff that I didn't know could be cut.
Yeah. Also, you drop it in and... broken.
Chaos. Whereas everything about Manscaped is... I mean, obviously, when I drop it in... Because I like to flush everything all at once. Yeah. When I drop... My Manscaped in there. I know I can just pick it out, give it a lick, clean it, and then go to town.
Because it's waterproof.
And it gets me so smooth, Joe.
Yeah.
I used to talc my balls.
Yeah.
Now I balls my talc.
Unbelievable. He's drying off his talc with his balls. That's how smooth and dry they are. Because that's the thing. In terms of smoothness, the new Lawnmower 5.0 has got two interchangeable blades. It's got your classic trimmer blade to take the bits off the top and the new foil blade to go as smooth as you like, wherever you like. And it's not just the trimmer, obviously. You're going to be... You can set your watch to that trimmer.
Yeah.
The Lawnmower 5.0, you can set your watch to it. But it's not just that. It's the weed whacker, ear and nose hair trimmer. Do you know those fiddly little bits? Especially as you get a little bit older. Or even the monobrow.
Yeah,
sometimes
little mono.
You want to just be taking that
bad boy.
You don't
need that, do you?
No, exactly. And it's not just that either. There's also the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. We deodorize all the smelly parts of our body, except the real, you know, the junk in the front. Give that a little deodorant as well, and the Crop Soother Toner as well. Also, it's got the skin safe technology. Like I said, no more crime scene. The skin is safe with Manscaped. And not just all of that, you get two free gifts as well. You get the Boxers 2.0 and the Shed Travel Bag, which means you can put it all in, take it with you on holiday, take it to work if you need to, take it to the gym.
Yeah.
If you want to cinema. Look and feel good, take it to the cinema, man. It's got a light on it, so even if you're on those back rows,
you
can still leave a little popcorn for the boys upstairs. That's manscaped.com and use the code PADDIT20 to get 20% off and free shipping. Thank you so much for Manscaped for sponsoring Uncensored. So Omar Berada, obviously we poached him from Manchester City. I think he was sort of fourth or fifth in command there.
Yep.
It's an upgrade for him. It's a promotion essentially for him in terms of his title. He's now the CEO of Manchester United.
Yeah, what a title. Do you know what I mean? If he's hungry for it, and obviously he showed a lot of ambition with Man City, and I'd like to talk about that, but if he's hungry for it and he's got that title of Manchester United CEO, it doesn't really get much bigger in football, does it?
It doesn't. This is the place to prove yourself as well. Because no offence to City, and obviously it's easier said than done staying at the top, as United know from when Sir Alex left. But he came into a winning machine there. The idea of taking United from where they have been to where we should be or where we want to be, that would be the ultimate thing. If you turn Man United from a team that's finishing fourth, third, fifth, seventh, fifth, second, into a team that is consistently challenging for league titles, all of their CVs, this will be the biggest thing on it.
Yeah.
This will be bigger than anything else on their CV. Maybe Brailsford will look at that cycling stuff. But other than that, this would be the sort of crowning achievement of all of these people's career.
The next Premier League title, whenever that comes for Manchester United, if it's soon, that has to be such an incredible moment for these people individually in their careers.
Exactly.
Because look at who you're competing against.
Yeah.
Exactly. Really strong, incredible teams that have got a lot of great talent, and you picked up Man United from not rock bottom, but not in a good place at all.
So this is what United said on their website about Omar Berada, the new CEO at Manchester United. He said, as one of the most experienced football executives at the top of European football, Omar brings a wealth of football and commercial expertise with a proven record of successful leadership and a passion to help lead change across the club. He is currently serving as the Chief Football Operations Officer for City Football Group, overseeing 11 clubs across 5 continents, and prior to this held senior roles at Barcelona. He's been doing it
and he's obviously well respected, because there's a thing about City fans where they like to suggest that the club don't let people go unless they know they aren't worth it, and that's mainly players like Zinchenko and Jesus and stuff like that. But it was the first time on social media where I saw City fans a bit worried about it.
Yeah.
And actually going, hold on, this is a big, big move.
We didn't want this to happen.
We didn't want this to happen. Like, they can slag off Jesus and all that all they want. This was not supposed to happen. This wasn't in the script.
Yeah.
And I think because of how quiet other people have been in the top of it, Pep said a couple of words and I know. I think they're a bit...
He was very defensive though. Do you remember what he said?
Very defensive.
When Pep was asked about it, they said, are you looking at that?
It nearly went.
It was so close to bouncing out of the corner. Anyone who's under the age of 20 won't know what this is a reference to, by the way. Do you want to explain it?
When you have a DVD and it's sort of, you don't, like, you might have a DVD on a menu screen.
So you've got to standby a little bit.
Yeah, so you can either click on press play on your DVD or go into like features and stuff. If you don't do anything for a while, there is a... Did I miss it?
You missed it, man!
Oh.
You missed it!
Huh?
Come on.
There's a little standby screen.
And it goes around, and every time it hits the wall, it changes colour.
But
everyone across the world, without even speaking to each other, was obsessed with the idea of it hitting just the very corner and bouncing back out. And we just got it then.
I'm going to have to wait ages. Tell me if it's close.
I will.
You can give me the thumb up.
Thumb up where?
Oh.
Thumbs up, you mean?
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
No, it's my new saying. Give me the thumb up.
Okay, good. Omar Berada, like you said, City fans seem to be handling it, and Pep in particular was handling it quite defensively. He's like, oh, yeah, paraphrasing. He's like, oh, yeah, but they don't get De Bruyne. They don't get Rodri. Yeah. They don't get Bernardo Silva with him. We've still got all them lot. Like, good luck having success when you've got shit players, basically.
Yeah, but here's the thing. City are... like mozzarella, and Berada is like burrata. And what's better, my friend? Burrata.
If his name wasn't Berada, would you still use that metaphor?
No, because I accidentally... for a minute, I thought you did say the cheese, and it got me hungry, because I'm starving.
Yeah, so you also said hungry for trophies a minute ago.
But mozzarella is like... It was great at one point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But Bharat is better in it.
A bit more. What? Yeah, well, for the sake of this metaphor, yes.
But for real life,
well, you couldn't put mozzarella, you couldn't put burrata on a pizza, could you?
Yeah, you can.
You still need mozzarella for that.
I've seen some dirty bastards put
so
wet,
unbelievably wet.
Mate.
We
got both.
Yeah, let's have both. Right, let's move on then to the sort of the next step, and this is one that isn't done yet, but is as good as done. We've literally got Newcastle putting this guy on the gardening leave. They've spoken about replacing him already. You know, it's just a matter of how much we pay for him and how long we have to wait for him.
Is the official...
Dan Ashworth,
sorry.
Go on.
Is the official term gardening leave?
Well, that's
Or is it just
used.
Like a nickname? Like, because obviously the idea is that, oh, you just let them go do the gardening because they're going to have so much time on their hands, they're going to just, you know, clean up and that.
Yeah, I would assume so. But that's what Newcastle actually said.
Gardening
And I looked
leave.
Up the origins of it, and it was originally almost like a sort of euphemistic, like, you know, go and do the gardening type thing. Whereas now it's actually what they say.
Really?
Newcastle used the phrase gardening leave, didn't they?
And do we know because there's been all sorts of different times kicking about how long his gardening leave might be?
Well, supposedly his contract ends in 2026. So at the start of 2026.
Yeah.
So United could theoretically have to wait, fucking 20 months or whatever.
That's trouble, isn't it?
Which would be trouble. But that's where the sort of financials come in, because Newcastle are already struggling with FFP.
Sure,
you missed it.
No,
that was it.
Was it?
You missed it. Newcastle are already struggling with FFP, so a bit of cash for them could mean that, you know, if they get 10, 15, 20 million for him, that could be halfway to a new centre back or a new winger or whatever they may need.
That's crazy, that.
Yeah, so this is a big asset
for
them.
We're paying £20 million for him. That's quite a lot.
That's so much money.
It's money that.
Imagine how big a head you would get. Imagine like now, because obviously you do radio stuff and all that.
Yeah.
Imagine a radio station went to your radio station and went, "We'll give you £20 million for Joe."
Well, it does.
How much would that change your ego?
Do you know what? Weirdly, it happens in the world of radio quite a lot. Gardening leave. That's how I know, because like certain presenters would be poached away from you. And in your contract, you often can't go to a rival, but it's never...
But usually,
it's never...
isn't the garden leaving radio is when there's an ongoing investigation, though, isn't there, usually?
Nah, nah.
For historic,
me, anyway.
Historic crimes.
We do have a garden an hour, though, on Radio Manchester, 11 till 12.
And it's just people like, Rolf Harris and that.
How do I... No.
Just chatting about, not allowed being on the radio anymore.
Can't chat about Rolf Harris. Why have we brought Rolf Harris?
He's dead, so you can say it now.
Is he dead?
Yeah, he died a couple of months ago.
Well, Rolf didn't do Garden Hour on BBC Radio Manchester, although I didn't listen to it if he did. People call about the tulips, the bushes. Why isn't their gardening growing? Why? And
who's on it? Mary, Mary, quite contrary.
And someone said they've got some brand new shoes, right? Garden shoes, but have... spikes in the bottom, really long spikes like studs. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to walk the length of your garden up and down, up and down, up and down. And then with those holes that the spikes create, it really just gets in the garden and helps it grow.
Oh, really?
That's all I learned in an hour of radio.
I heard a rumour that you bought a pair of those shoes and you walked up and down your Christmas turkey so that the basting butter would infiltrate.
I wore those
deeply.
Shoes and took it to five a side. I scored so many
you
goals.
You couldn't move.
No one was near me.
Really?
Fuck.
That's unbelievable. So Dan Ashworth then. Is the current, I think, just director of sport at Newcastle, isn't he, Ethan? I think it's the same title.
Yeah,
so he's taking a straight sort of, I would say sideways move, but I think it is coming to Man United is an upgrade, isn't it? But he's been placed on garden leave by Newcastle. He's told them he wants to join Man United. You know, we've seen reports in the BBC, we've seen reports, Fabrizio Romano, all the top journalists have said United have made an official approach for him now, which means this isn't just like, initially it was like, oh, there's been talks, but nothing official's happened. Now it's like, we want Dan Ashworth. What do we have to do to get him?
Yeah.
How much is he excited? He worked at Brighton. He worked for England. And obviously, we've not won neither of those two have won any trophies. But if you look at the sort of track history of them both, and like the if you're plotting it on a graph, it's upward lines,
upwards
isn't
level.
It, for both of them?
How incredible has football become where it feels like we need to get excited about individuals? Like, obviously... The players, the transfer of players will always be exciting. Won't
it? Because they're the ones scoring the goals, winning the games.
But now, and then managers, you know, we're going to switch managers, we're going to poach them from here and here, and you're going to sign a new manager. Wow.
I can tell you're hungry because you used the word hungry for success. Then you've said poached three times. Yeah. You're just thinking of all different ways to talk about
food. No, I'm not. And then now obviously we're excited about, you know, directors of football and CEOs and coaches. We like to get excited. It's the evolution of football fans. We're excited to purchase these players. Listen, Dan Ashworth, as someone who loves watching the game of football but doesn't know too much about what's going on upstairs, I can only read the room online and see that it feels quite a big deal to this, and it's not often the way that United fans are getting excited about it. It's the way that other teams are getting worried about it, and that's what I'm clawing onto. I'm clawing onto the fact that these people do not want Man United to put the right people in the right position, because there is worry there that these people are going to, hopefully, fingers crossed, pick up this team and take them into the right direction.
It's mad to me, that sort of, at this point, ends the official contact, official approach, these lot are going to happen or have happened.
Yeah.
The final two people on this list are strong rumours at this point.
Strong rumours.
But I would say one or both of them do look to be coming in at Manchester United. But that, just the ones we've mentioned so far, if we just go back up there, what is that? One, two, three, four.
Four.
One, two, three, four so far, with another potential two coming in. These are six people in like upper senior management roles at Manchester United, or certainly five. I think one of them's going to be an analyst, so that's not quite the same. Yeah. But five people coming in, and we've had Richard Arnold go, so he needs a place in. John Murtough hasn't left, but may well either leave or be sidelined as part of this. But that's two basically outgoing. And five coming in.
Well,
how many fucking gaps? And not to mention the fact that Dave Brailsford has come in as well. We're not even mentioning him.
No.
But he's got decision-making power.
Yeah.
This is five people coming in. How full of gaps was Man United as an institution for the last 15, 20 years?
I think if you take Man United as a business and you see the fact that the Glazers put the club on sale for about a year, anxieties at the top must have been there from day one of Glazers looking for alternative ways to run Manchester United. And that is not good for any business. Yeah. If your management at the top are worried about losing their job, they are going to trickle down that bad energy into every aspect of the club.
Yeah.
And it's clearly what they're worried about is happening.
Yeah.
They're worried about they're not good enough for this job.
Yeah.
And the people who are going to come into Old Trafford are going to get rid of you and going to bring in people who are good enough. So not only is Ten Hag, when you line up the pyramid scale of Manchester United, you see from the board to the CEO, Ten Hag is kind of like a third above it. And then you've got players and coaches. What he must have been dealing with, because some people might throw the toys out of the pram, might start doing a shit job, might not even care.
Yeah.
Ten Hag has had to be dealing with these people above him, sort of having a say on his career, knowing that they are suffering a little bit from nerves, anxiety, worry, or maybe a lack of, I'm not going to be... Whenever this sale is done, I'm going.
Well, Richard Arnold is already gone.
He's gone.
He's left Man United.
And he was running it. Yeah. I mean, you know, you saw. I don't know. It must have been a crazy year at the football club.
Yeah.
From going on sale to Sir Jim coming in, that year, behind the scenes, must have been so chaotic.
Yeah. Have you ever lived in a? Have you ever rented an apartment or house that is being sold at the time you're living?
Oh right? Yeah.
That's a nervy feeling. I've had that twice happen now. No, three times happen, and every time it's obviously not at the forefront of my mind. I can get on my job, and I can move to a different flat. But every time you think, I might have to move out when this happens. Is there any update on that? You're emailing the landlord, the estate agent, they're selling the flat. We don't think they're going to rent it privately. You think you can say?
Yeah.
But I've been kicked out of flats before because they've sold it and they want to put the rent up by 300 quid. And it does change your demeanour and your thoughts around it. So if you're Richard Arnold, who has left instantly, for the last 12 months, like you're saying, it's obviously playing on his mind. He's been updating that CV, you know, handing that out behind the scenes to your Crystal Palaces and that, thinking, I'm going to need a new job at some point. That isn't the most efficient way for a football club or any sort of institution. Like I said, even living in a flat, you want stability and you want foundations you can build on. And thinking all the time, the fans hate me, which I think maybe is slightly unfair for some people and fair for others. The players aren't playing well. I don't really know what I'm doing, if I'm truly honest. and I'm probably going to get sacked in the next 12 months, and I'm going to be made a symbol of the final era of the failure of Manchester United. Yeah. That's a shit mental and physical position to be in as a person. So not that I'm sort of washing away any bad things that Arnold or Murtagh may have done or may have not done, because I don't think they've been as terrible as Ed Woodward, for instance. But it's not a good situation for them to find themselves in for the last 12 months. Stick around.
Stick around.
They're probably going to get sacked, but don't leave now because we need you.
There's also a bit of a United curse with people who sort of not get found out, but sort of pushed to one side a little bit. More like sort of notable the players, certain players that have just, their contracts have run out of United. We never see them again. Yeah. Phil Jones, De Gea, Jesse Lingard's changed. Obviously, he's gone.
Yeah.
But these players,
Paul Pogba. He's moved to Juventus. But a mixture of injury, sort of family turmoil off the pitch, you know, political shit going on. He's played like 3 games for Juve, and it looks like he's going to leave in the summer.
But
what's going on?
I don't know. What is going on with David De Gea?
I don't know.
It's one of the biggest mysteries that. Because
how old is David De Gea? Is he 32?
He's not too old.
He's not too old at all.
So is he retiring now from football?
He hasn't. He hasn't retired, has he?
So what does he do? If he starts again next year, saying it's signed by a club, in his sort of record, this year there'll just be nothing.
So he just turned 33 in November, so he's 33. I like how you're thinking of it from like someone trying to get a job at like a restaurant. So between May 2023 and June 2024, there's just nothing on there.
I went travelling, saw the world.
You went travelling?
Found myself.
Found yourself, did you?
Yeah.
Well, you stayed in Egypt. What do you mean Egypt?
I went to see the pyramids.
You went to see the pyramids. Yeah, for a year?
The big.
Right, David, you got the job.
Thank you very much.
Big hands, lovely. So it is a bit of an odd one. I think it's different with a footballer because he's so public. People know what he's done.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ring Man United. Sorry, if you've got references on it, I'm just going to ring United. Hello, is he? Yeah. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, it is
absolutely bizarre that the goalkeeper for, maybe not the most successful, but
one of the biggest
clubs. The biggest club in the world, or one of, top five. And also, I know that we dig David De Gea out a little bit. People take the piss at United. We're still one of the best football teams in the world.
Yeah, we were good as well.
All of, not just like professional teams, because obviously, but even like top flight teams. We finish second, third, fifth, fourth. We're one of the best football teams in the world. And he can't get another job.
Crazy.
Or do you think he only wants a Juve, a PSG, a Real?
He must just be sitting there and thinking like that. Like, for example, I only brought him up because of Richard Arnold. I'm thinking, I don't know if he'll get another top job.
Yeah.
Again, but will he go to a sort of, you know, a club that's just maybe been promoted, or maybe a lower end Premier League club, and take a role there? Or again, does it look like it's beneath him in a way? And is that what David De Gea is doing? It looks like it's sort of beneath him in some way, and he's just waiting for a top job to come knocking. But surely, at his age, what will come knocking?
I don't know. Yeah, does he think the sort of Real Sociedad job isn't befitting of a man who's been at United for 12 years? Who knows? Let's move down another notch then, because we've still got more hierarchy to cut through here. Jason Wilcox. Heard
who's
of him?
Who's Cox?
Well, will he, won't he? He will. Have you ever heard of him?
Never heard of Wilcox.
Stop trying to make this a sex
what
thing.
What do you mean? I'm not trying to make it
you're
a
allowed
sex
to have the.
You said, have you heard of
you're
Wilcox?
You're allowed to have the letter C-O-X in your
surname. I've never heard of Wilcox. I have never heard of James, all right?
He's not called James.
Oh, Jason.
Jason.
I know Jason Wilcox.
Yeah, do you? No. Chasing what?
Chasing what?
Chasing
Wilcox.
Wills what?
Will who?
He's currently Southampton's director of football, right?
Brilliant.
He's been linked to another role at Manchester United, which would be underneath your Ashworths.
Yeah, I feel like we're on a fucking Indeed podcast, you know, Indeed.com.
This is the LinkedIn podcast here on Stretford Palace.
He is the director
of football at Southampton.
Yes, brilliant.
And he is, here's his morning routine. He wakes up and has some water with some salt cracked into it.
Have you heard about the Americano sunrise that's taken over America?
That sounds like a lovely cocktail.
It isn't a cocktail, but guess this. No, guess it. Guess it.
Americano sunrise. It's got to be something to do with coffee. Sunrise has usually got two different colours in it. So I'm going to guess it is something ridiculous like a tin of tomato soup with an espresso poured on top.
No, you're far away. It is an Americano sunrise is orange juice and coffee mix.
Oh, should have just said that.
What do you mean?
Well, because I thought that, but I thought it can't be possible.
But yeah, but and that's the new craze in America.
Really?
Yeah, they love it. Americano Sunrise. Apparently, it's quite. It doesn't taste. I don't know. You get your vitamins in there. You get obviously your caffeine hit. Boom.
That sounds great.
You should try one.
Yeah, of course. I'd try anything.
Jason Wilcox.
I wouldn't try that.
Has an American Sunrise.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Right, so he worked alongside Omar Berada at Manchester City. He used to work for City, okay? He worked for City for 9 years until going to Southampton only this season. So he basically went, to get a promotion, I'm going to drop down a level, literally and metaphorically, down to the Championship. Southampton doing very well down there now. But he had been promoted sort of through two or three different roles at Man City. I don't know if you know this, because we're of a slightly different age to Jay and Stee and that. He played for Blackburn when they won the Premier League.
Wow.
So he's a good level Premier League sort of footballer, not a massive name, obviously, but played and is a Premier League winner himself. He went last January to Southampton as their director of football, taking an upgrade in his role to, you know, like I said for the sake of a downgrade. This would be then a massive upgrade for him 100%. To come back to United as a director of football, which, again, I don't even know, sporting director of football, technical director, who knows what these actually mean. But you're looking at a hierarchy of probably Wilcox or someone else, Ashworth, Berada, Blanc, Brailsford, and then you've got...
That's a big order, isn't it?
And then you got Sir Jim Ratcliffe, and probably slightly above him, the Glazers. Family. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's quite a chunky set of people, all of which weren't here 3 months ago.
Yeah, which is like, this crazy, is
and the word overhaul is used a lot, isn't it? Like, you get two new midfielders in, and now you've got eight midfielders, and two of them are new, and people got an overhaul. This is an absolute, unquestionable, monumental overhaul at Man United, isn't it? Yeah. Every single rung of the ladder has been replaced, taken out, brought back in. Like, this is completely different.
How much of the... Because, obviously, Sir Jim's coming with a big pot of money, and we're going through a lot of stuff that's going to be quite expensive, especially when we look at Old Trafford, new players, new signings. Have we spent a good chunk of a pot on these new individuals? Or I guess it won't cost as much as footballers cost.
Mm.
But we're talking about 20 million here, 10 million here, new contracts here, there and everywhere. People are definitely making the jump to come to United. But there's also got to be a bit of cash incentive there, isn't there?
Yeah, well, that's a point that, other than Ashworth, it's not really been mentioned, has it? None of these other people have had a fee connected to them. I think they've all been allowed to leave more smoothly than Ashworth have, partly because I think Ashworth is maybe on a longer contract, and also Newcastle are tight for cash at the minute, aren't they? So I think that's probably played a role as well. But the contracts they're on aren't nothing. If you're going to pay 10 million quid for someone, he's not going to be on 50 grand a year, is he?
No,
I don't know what it'll be, but you're probably looking at hundreds of thousands or millions a year, for sure. So that's going to be one thing. Again, there's also rumours, and this is the sort of the sad reality a little bit of business and maybe of how the Glazers have run United. There's reports of up to 200 jobs going at United.
Really?
Which is sad in an individual level for every one of those people who... Almost all of them haven't made bad decisions at United, aren't anything to do with the fact that United are this sort of bloated, languishing organisation. It's not their fault, and yet probably for the sake of Man United, it might well be the right thing to do to sort of trim down in size a little bit, be a bit more focused rather than having all these branches that maybe aren't necessary. Yeah. On a personal level, though, as someone who lives in Manchester and, you know, I haven't got friends and family who work at Old Trafford, but I know Jay has, I know Stee has, I know a lot of people who have got mates and friends who work at Old Trafford. That's a sad prospect, isn't it, for them, if nothing else?
It is a sad prospect. I do hope, though, that the ones that might be making their way are the ones that just weren't right for United.
Yeah.
And maybe even they understand that their future is somewhere else.
I think you should deliver the news.
I will.
Get everyone in a room, and I know how you do it, because you're a sucker for the sort of the radio, the show of it all.
Yeah, guys.
You do it like X Factor. You split them into four different groups, A, B, C, and D.
The over 25s over there. The boys, the girls.
The ones that Joe fancies. They're safe, aren't they? They're going straight to judges' houses, which is weird, because that's not part of the role. But you bring them all in on stage at once, bring them all on the pitch.
No, halfway point.
On the pitch. You all of you are safe. You'd make a game show of it. That's careers you're talking about.
All right, but yeah, but you monetize it, you give me a cash. Thanks for, you know, you can pay for Ashworth straight away.
So apparently he's on $1.5 million at Newcastle.
Brilliant, that, isn't it?
Which is a shit load.
Are you thinking about what celebrity chef they're going to bring in to overhaul the entire Man United catering?
Oh, I hadn't thought about
that. Because that's what City did. They brought Jamie Oliver in. Do you remember that?
Oh, I forgot
and
about that.
Even the Manchester Arena have brought in a three Michelin starred chef. He's going to overhaul their entire menu. I'm thinking a Ramsay.
Oof. You're going big there.
Can't think of anyone else, really.
No. You're thinking of, what's he called, the fish and chips guy?
What do you mean?
The guy who sells fish and chips. What's his name? The fish and chip chain. It's named after a bloke. What's
Harrods. No. Halford. No, not Halford's.
What's it called? Alfie Ramsden's.
Ramsden! Harry Ramsden.
You're going to get Harry Ramsden.
Yeah, I get Harry Ramsden. Or James Martin. Ooh. Who also now owns Spud You Like.
Yeah, I'm not on that.
Just get the fucking Spuds going.
No offence, don't want a Spud You Like in there. Nah. Who should we get? Who's the best one United could get?
Ramsey's the best.
Do you think?
Imagine having a fucking beef wellington at half time.
No one wants that. No one, surely.
Are you mad?
You don't want to have to use a knife and fork for your half time meal.
Take 2-1 down. Oh, fucking, that's bad.
What, and you got on your lap in the tight little chairs at Old Trafford with your knees already touching the person's neck behind you. You've got a beef wellington on a plate.
How big is this beef wellington? I'm thinking it's small, biteable.
No, because you have to have gravy with it.
Yeah, you have gravy on a pie.
Yeah, in a pie.
Yeah, but you just pour a little bit on, so it's like...
And where's it going? Just down between your fingers.
It's a portable Wellington.
Kyle McCauley is an analyst who has worked at Chelsea, who is currently at Chelsea, who United are also targeting. This is the last name on our list. So he's been the chief analyst at Chelsea. He's also worked, again, alongside Ashworth. Before, he views him as a key appointment and wants McCauley to join him at Manchester United. Now, the one thing... So, first of all, neither of us... I'm going to speak on your behalf. No. Neither of us have a single clue who Kyle McCauley is or how good he is.
No, but you look at the Chelsea season so far and you think,
yeah, exactly.
What's he analysing?
But he went there with Ashworth from Brighton. With Potter from Brighton. So, they worked together at Brighton. He obviously did good things there. Brighton became a very difficult team to beat coming up from the Championship. Like you said, anyone who's working at Chelsea currently, I don't go, replicate that at United, please.
Yeah,
but what he's done at Brighton has obviously got him the job at Chelsea in the first place. And everything's just on fire at Chelsea, so does it even count?
The more personal relationships there are, the better.
Yeah.
If these were 6-7 brand new, sort of never spoke to each other, directors and in positions of power, you'd worry about them gelling.
Yeah.
But now you see these little strands of connections and they've worked here, they've worked there. Maybe, just maybe, this team can come together.
It's nice, isn't it? Do you know when Forrest signed like 35 players last
season? Yeah, it worked. Well,
they stayed up, but they weren't a great success. It's almost like that. But again, this one thing I'm really liking that we didn't see once under the Glazers, except when they got Ed Woodward to be CEO because they knew him from JP Morgan, is a working knowledge of the industry that they're in.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's only a small thing, and just getting your mates to do everything isn't a good idea.
No,
I'm not
saying,
you know, I don't want Dan Ashworth Jr. being United's new fucking right
Please
back.
No.
I don't want that to happen. But
he's good.
If he's world class, then get him. And obviously, if there's one person who's going to be able to tell if he's world class, it's Dan Ashworth. You know, he's right under his nose. He's not going to miss it. But we're seeing, like, a knowledge of the industry. These people know each other.
Yeah.
They know how good the other one is. They, you know, people know Ashworth. People know Brailsford. People know Jim Ratcliffe. These are known people in the sport and in the world that we're looking at. And that is a massive boost. You're
Huge.
Much more likely to hire someone who is good if you've got a 15-year knowledge of the industry that you're talking about.
Yeah.
If you're just someone in America who doesn't care about football, doesn't care about Man United, you're way more likely to hire an Ed Woodward than you are... I don't even know, an Omar Berada, because you don't have a fucking clue what you're doing. Mm. And even little things like, and I don't love the idea of United being in debt, but I think we can all agree, you know, leveraging the debt against the club to buy it when you've put nothing in yourself
it's
is
crazy,
very different to, you know, taking on a bit of debt in order to fund a new stadium. They're two massively different things. But even stuff like Ratcliffe's knowledge of, maybe we can use the Levelling Up Fund for that. Maybe we can use these government schemes. Maybe, like, he has a working knowledge of business in Britain that the Glazers don't have, and these things help. It's good. It makes sense. It's not. It's not nothing that these people know each other, that they've met, that they can vouch for each other. They're world class at what they do. That fucking helps stuff.
Here's a question: do you ever see a time where United have obviously won a Premier League? We're back at it 3 or 4 years, and instead of the next season when everyone gets the new shirts, instead of getting a player on the back, you get Berada, Wilcox,
Ratcliffe. Imagine, right, going from basically you're made to be a bit of a pariah if you wear a United shirt. If you buy a shirt from the megastore, other fans will boo you or just try and beat you up or just ostracise you. Like, that's not the done thing at all, is it, at the minute, for United fans? Going from that, because the owners are so despised that even just paying the money
is
considered
even buying
sacrilege.
A pie at half time.
Yeah. Like, what are you buying that for? Right?
Slap it out of people's hands.
To go from that to getting the owner's name on the back of the shirt. What a fucking turnaround that would be.
I think that's coming. I honestly think it's coming.
Imagine that. That'd be unbelievable, wouldn't it? I mean, no one wants it.
I'd get Wilcox on the back of mine.
You've already got it. Why has it got the word suck in the middle? Right, that's going to be all from us. This has been Uncensored. Thank you to Manscaped for sponsoring the show. Thank you, Joe, for coming
on. Manscaped.
That is Manchester United's new structure explained. Very, very exciting times for Manchester United. Hit subscribe if you haven't already, and we'll see you in a bit. Sports Social Podcast Network.